You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about the weekly anime of Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
How are you?
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 22nd to the 28th of February 2021.
Getting another month where all those line up into nice, neat sevens, so that's great.
So sweet. Until you get that stupid 31st.
What's up with that? Ruining it for everyone, yeah.
Yeah. At least it's not a five Thursday month, so I don't have to worry about my paycheck having to stretch another week.
Oh, jeez.
Those are the bad months, though. Not really that bad when you can't go out anywhere to spend money on anything, so...
If you can budget accordingly, you should be get through it just fine.
Yes, yes, yes. That was the main revelation of lockdowns, was revealing just, I feel like, am I addicted to shopping? Well, I'm not addicted to shopping because I'm not getting withdrawal feelings, but I was like, I clearly do like, when I go somewhere for a walk, I do like to spend money at some point during it.
It's a nice treat.
Yeah. Like today, I went out for a walk and I saw an empanada window. But it's an empanada. Yeah, I could go for an empanada wrap right now. Good for you.
Righty here. We're going to start off with the Spoke Rohan Kishibe, episode 16, At the Confessional. This is episode 1 on Netflix. Episode 3 in terms of the order in which they were released.
I feel like we can basically gonzo this and do it in whatever fucking order we feel like, but yeah, sure.
Episode 16 in whatever cockamamie continuity he's building in this
doesn't
series.
Doesn't really matter. I mean, here was some shit that Rohan probably made up.
Yes.
Like, don't he gives you a timeline for this. This is while he was recuperating from... wait, what season was that? Was that part 5?
Part 4, this is just before part 5, because...
This is just before part 5, yeah, okay.
Yep. I like how we get, like, oh, here is, like, if you want to find out just how Koichi learned how to speak Italian by asking Rohan to write them with Heaven's Door, make me, Koichi cannot speak Italian, here's how he did it, you straight out asked him. It's no big mystery to it.
And he was still a dick about it. He was like, yeah, I could easily just do this and you would leave me the fuck alone, but it's like, let me tell you a spooky story when I was in Italy.
Yes, I was recently in Italy doing research for my next comic, which coincidentally is the next comic you're going to be in because I'm also the author.
Author stand-ins are weird.
Particularly when it's an author standing who's describing going to Italy to research the comic, and then the very next arc after this point in time in the continuity of the comic
is the Italian one.
And that's why he needs him to write in that he can speak Italian in him in the first place. Anyway,
you're trying to warn him off, don't go to Italy. You get some fucking spooky ghosts in there.
We'll get to the end with them not believing ghosts, but that's ridiculous as well.
I mean, like, there's lots of ridiculousness in this episode, and the central ultimate conflict is silly as fuck, which is just like, yeah, perfect fucking Rohan episode then.
So he's taking photos inside a church in Italy.
And he's not, like, it's rude. It's very rude. And you're not supposed to, like, take pictures of the confessional, because he's like, a confessional, it's like a phone booth, but for sins.
Yeah. It explains it, because most Japanese folks probably never even seen a confessional before. It's like, you just go in here, priest sits into the middle bit, and you go in here, and they don't know who you're talking to, so you can just, like, tell your sins, you know, because you keep secret, like, within you, it's just going to, like, eat you up inside. So it's supposed to just let it out, even anonymously.
Whereas I'm Irish and raised Catholic, but not anymore. So I definitely know what a confessional is. And I definitely know how many crimes are worth how many Hail Marys.
Yep.
Ooh.
It's a very volatile little stock market I got going on there. But I didn't mind doing it because it meant I could take the middle part of the day off of school.
There is that advantage.
Yeah.
Sometimes I barely had any crimes. I had to make up something. I didn't want to do my homework, that kind of thing.
You're like, going to hell. 10 Hail Marys.
Well, them's the breaks.
Yeah, so he's taking photos inside the confessional as well when somebody goes into the other booth.
He's like, I swear, I did not know that was the bit for the priest beforehand. I'm only telling you the bit I knew it was for the priest beforehand because I know that now, obviously, when that guy thought I was the priest. But then as you're saying, it's like, I have to tell you these secrets. They're weighing on my soul. And he's like, this might make a good story, though. I should probably.
Loves the gas, does Rohan.
He could have went, oh, no, sorry, I'm not a priest. I walked into the wrong bit of confessional. Sorry, sorry. Because nothing had been revealed, but it was just like, ooh, juicy secrets, though.
Yeah, doesn't the guy say he's addicted to confessing as well around this point?
Like he has confessed about this before, but it's still eating him up. Yeah, yeah.
It's a very dark secret. It's like super dark. I mean, dude, I'm in there every week, and it's still, I haven't absolved my soul of this. It's like, really? I mean, oh, my son, please, go on. He's trying to like be like one. Ooh, little necessity, discipline. No, gotta be. No, you're a priest. Okay, go.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a homeless man who's looking at a sandwich, and the guy whose sandwich it is doesn't care for this homeless man looking at his sandwich.
Because he used to work so hard, he didn't even get to have a girlfriend. It's bullshit. And this guy just wants to walk up and eat his fucking sandwich after hanging out in the park all day. So he orders him to do some. You lift some of the bags for me.
It's real like a cycle of abuse, you know, where the abuser becomes the abuser. His boss is giving him a hard time, but now he's the boss. He's giving his quote unquote employee a hard time as well. It's the vicious circle, man. Where does it stop?
The poor guy is kind of like, dude, I haven't eaten in like 5 days. Let me have a bit of your sandwich, and then I'll do the rest of the work. And he's like, you get paid when you're fucking done, kind of thing. And just being a real dick about it. And the guy, unsurprisingly, fucking collapses under the weight of, what were they moving, corn or something?
Big ones of corn flour.
Yes.
Corn flour. That was it. Yeah.
So it definitely has to be a corn product because of the line through the story of corn.
Yeah, you're right. That is one of the weird themes of this episode. Mm-hmm.
He collapses underneath it. He starts giving out to him about, like, stop pretending that you've fallen over to laze off.
Yeah.
But then the man crawls up from underneath his table and declares he's going to get his revenge on this man when he's happiest. Mm. And then some other guys are like, hey, this guy's died. And he's like, what? How could that guy be?
I like the way those guys were in the same uniform but had less ridiculous hair.
Yes.
You know, they're the main characters. They're not main characters, but they like that thing he was wearing, that was part of the uniform of moving bags of corn flour.
Oh, yeah. Like under the cap, same giant fringe. I guarantee
that's part of the uniform. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's like four arrows, isn't it? His bangs.
Yeah.
But going straight up rather than down. He was like, oh, but then he explains after this event, his life suddenly had a turnaround. He became incredibly lucky. He married a Milan model. He got an inheritance from a dead relative. He won the soccer polls. The farm
and
he bought.
He had a really good idea for popcorn. Like, he became a popcorn magnet or something.
Like loads of corn products.
Corn flakes or something.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he introduced them to Italy and they did really well or something.
Ooh, molto bene.
And he had a daughter, and then, yeah. And we see him walking through in a plaza, and the daughter's showing off that she can catch this popcorn in her mouth.
Importantly, if you remember, he's there with the daughter, but also there is one of the attendants, one of the butlers, something like that, in tow as well.
Yeah. Dude with a cool mustache, basically.
Yeah. And it goes, she misses, so they try to suggest, oh, you had your eyes closed, try again with your eyes open. And then he thinks to himself,
like, I am so happy.
Yes, this is the happiest I've ever been.
Oh, are you?
Oh, yeah. And then the daughter elbows the other guy in the face, knocking him on the ground, sticks her tongue out, and the homeless man's face grows out of her tongue.
He's like, ha ha, catch you, motherfucker. Don't worry, I'm only temporarily possessing your daughter. So what I'm going to do, right, is I could just cut off your head right now and kill you, but I'd feel bad about it. So I'll give you a chance. And if I give you a chance, that means I'll get a chance to get into heaven.
Yeah.
The deal is that means I'm just leaving it up to fate. Like, God can't fucking punish me for that shit.
Yeah, the dude's going, oh, well, you died. It was an accident. It wasn't my fault. It wasn't your fault. You were the one who made me carry that bag. I told you I needed it for 5 days. You didn't believe me. But we'll leave it up to God to decide. Let God judge what's going to happen between us. And give us something trivial. Let's say, oh, I don't know. It is bad popcorn. You can catch it, throw a big bag of popcorn into the air, up higher than the street lamp, and catch it in your mouth 3 times in a row. Universe is on your side. God says, fate decrees, you were innocent. It was my fault. I will disappear from your life and leave you alone. However, if you don't get 2 or 3 times in a row, I fucking got you.
Then I get to kill you and then move on to the afterlife free of sin because I left it up to fate. Yeah. And it's just the ridiculous lengths they go to is beautiful. I'm just like, throw the popcorn up and catch it. The deadly, like, oh, I have so much time to talk about all the fucking techniques I'm going to use to catch this popcorn in my mouth.
It felt very like this chapter of the Rohan series. You know, I suppose the prior one we discussed, the run, was a bit this way as well. Yeah. But this feels the most like, oh, JoJo, battle of wits.
Yes.
Ridiculous stakes over the most stupid fucking thing.
Oh, and also the like an environmental factor they hadn't accounted for coming into play.
Yeah, and like he has to do it 3 times, and each round, like there's a new thing in play, basically, and a new way that's like, now I gotta consider the ramifications of this.
Yeah, so the first one is throwing it up, and he gets blinded by the sun, and so he only just catches it on the target, has to like roll it around to get it into his mouth.
Yeah, it's when the basket, when the ball is kind of like rolling around the basket, but he kind of loops it in with his tongue. And it's like, and he's like, I can fucking do this. I got confidence. I was like, you can fucking talk when you're fucking finished, when you won entirely. Says his daughter's tongue.
Yeah. Then it clouds over and he's like, oh, yeah, got it now. Absolutely got it now. Then he throws it up. But then 2 pigeons arrive and he's like, oh, no, the pigeons are going to go for it. What am I going to do?
I think I'm feeding them.
So what he does is he throws all the other popcorn on the ground so they go to that and he can catch the second one in his mouth. But now he looks up and he sees him throwing all the popcorn on the ground has made the pigeons think, oh, you're feeding pigeons, are you? And loads of pigeons have turned up and eaten all the popcorn. So he's only
except
got
for one kernel.
One piece left. And all these pigeons looking at him as if to expect, like, come on, feed it to us.
It's ineffectual trying to scoot them. I was just like, yeah, that's fucking real.
Return kind of charm, buddy. Let's see you do it.
Well,
but goes.
Yes, I was like, what's he done? His hands are on fire. But yes, what he's done
very
is
very JoJo, very original JoJo of him. Yeah,
he's soaked it in oil and set it on fire. So
pigeons won't go near it.
This is what he just like put it all over his hands and then okay, hands on
like
fire.
He has a lighter in his
let's
hands.
Put
so I'm
the,
basically...
Let's put the popcorn in there and then flick it off.
Like he has to do it when his possessed daughter claps. So he had enough time to because he has a lighter in his hand. He obviously like snapped it the fuck open and just got his hands covered in not petrol, whatever the fuck it is inside lighters. Lighter fluid. Thank you. Couldn't think of the word. He didn't do this very carefully. He's like, haha, now just to catch this flaming popcorn in my mouth and I've won.
But the sun comes out again and he gets his head cut off. And then he's like, so I guess you're wondering why I'm here talking to you, given that I had my head cut off in that contest I just described.
Fucking right you are. I mean, yes, my son.
And that was like, I was slightly confused for a second. I was like, wait, how is that even? All right, fine. It's JoJo's. It's weird as fuck.
Yeah, so.
That's okay.
You got the wrong man.
Yes, he was expecting this, so he had one of his workers get plastic surgery to look like him, and he had plastic surgery to look like somebody else.
Mm.
And so it was not he who was beheaded, but one of his workers, who has now also cursed him. He's being followed around by 2 ghosts.
He's been followed by the ghost of himself beheaded and the ghost of the, I think he kept calling him a tramp or something like that. But we're both like, and he's like, wait, you guys can follow me into the church? Oh, fuck. You know,
hat on ground. Like, oh, man.
Promptly leaves. And we cut back to Rohan telling the story, and he's gathered quite an audience.
Yes. Uncle Yasu was there. Yukako was there.
It was like, ooh, that was a spooky story. He's, like, kind of like, wait, when did you guys get here? He was really caught up in his own story.
And they're like, are you sure it's not just a stand battle? It sounds a lot like a stand battle.
That sounds like
us.
A stand battle. Yeah, it's weird as shit.
It's the fact that they wouldn't think ghosts exist when they had a friend who was a ghost.
Yeah. They've seen weirder shit, though. Yeah, mostly stands are weirder than ghosts.
Yeah, I think this could have been prior to when they go to the Ghost Alley, though.
No, this is...
No, it's supposed to be after, because he's about to go to Italy.
Yeah,
and your one's going out with Koichi.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be after. I just feel like Okuyasu's idiocy is spreading the moment he shows. I could believe him forgetting that they knew a ghost.
Yeah, that makes sense. As you know, he is an idiot. But I did like the just telling the story, and then him, Rohan, kind of going to them. I do believe that man was evil, but I gotta respect his moxie.
Yes.
His will to live should be, you know, admired. Just between, you know, this maybe it was when he had to explain what a confessional was and everything after that, got me thinking, this is... He's just seen a John Woo film just now, because he's in a church. It's like 10
stand-up. Pigeons were the problem.
There's pigeons, there's face-off, there's guys swapping faces. Yeah, you just watched face-off and thought, no, what I just needed was more ghosts. I'm going to provide them.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. I think I enjoyed it more than the run, and I enjoyed the run a lot. I'm trying to think whether I enjoyed it more than the other two.
Yeah,
think
it's been kind of good. The order, at least, that we've approached them from, I think they've escalated in quality over time.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Just got lucky like that. But where are the rest of them?
Where's my
burrito?
They'll come out as it's promos when the next season is actually made and released on Blu-ray, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with the big JoJo symposium happening later on this month.
I hope it's Stone Ocean, but it could just be like some more Rohan, which will be fine as well.
It seems like the kind of thing is that they've seeded it so far in advance, it could be like, multiple announcements of various merchandising opportunities and outlets.
Which
we hope amongst them is Stone Ocean.
The first time we know it's coming, but it'd be nice to just get a little update on it, that's all.
Or it'll be a gacha game or a pachinko machine.
I know it'll be a mobile game. All this build up, I know it's gonna be a fucking mobile game. It always is that way. Special announcement about from Go and a Guy later this month. Devilman mobile game.
Devilman Endless Runner. It's like, yeah, great. Okay, that's just what I fucking want.
Do you need to bring all the press here just to say that? I don't know. It seems like a waste of resources to me.
Yeah.
We already have the JoJo's Endless Runner.
That's the only one I remember enjoying.
Then we've got Vlad Love, episode 3. What was this one called? It was called Sabbath Night Fever. Sabbath Night Fever. Right, yes. So the first half is... They've been to a movie called Gokei Body... Oh, no, they're going to a movie called Gokei Body Snatcher from Hell. And they run into the Megane of... Vlad Love, the head of the cinema club.
Yeah, and of course, that's some choice words. Oh, of course, he would go to such trash like this. Here we go. Just lay us out about what kind of cinema you think is best, please.
While constantly breaking the fourth wall, obviously. Yeah.
Yes.
And also, as well as like constantly this as well, like having to go with at Bamba saying, why? It's a president of the film club. It's like, why are you speaking in such expository dialogue? It's so cliche and so stale.
I didn't mind that as a recurring joke this episode. I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, and I like the fact that the second time they do the you're thinking out loud bit, she does complain about this being a recurring gag. So then they agree to go to walk back on the way, because Mackie's complaining she's hungry. And so they go to a gyoza restaurant. And as they're on the way, we get just an essay about the Hadley Page Victor Bomber appear on screen.
I did have to read that, and I was just like, is this like just referencing when people go like, I've put in very specific plane because that is my thing as an animator?
Yes.
But haven't you wondered when you see a plane, or maybe when you hear it and look up and it's flying over you, like, where's it going to? What's its purpose? Is it this a passenger plane, or could it have been used to ferry and drop atomic weapons? Maybe.
I mostly think when I hear a plane going overhead, it's like, we're not under any flight lanes. What the fuck?
Yeah, when I used to hear them, I'd be like, oh, they're going off to the bombing range. I knew exactly where they were going and why they were going at such speed and at such low altitude.
I get buzzed by helicopters mostly, and I kind of wonder what poor so-and-so that they've scrambled the chopper to go harass somebody who's probably just, I don't know, trying to find somewhere to sleep tonight.
Yeah. Here it's military helicopters, I think, just going from one place to another. But yeah, on the East Coast, where I was before, yeah, it was people flying out to the wash to drop bombs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess mostly when I hear helicopters, it's emergency helicopters, not only for suicides and jumpers and stuff, but like because, especially like in this side of the country with very few hospitals and shit, it's like, it's basically like hearing an ambulance. It's like, oh, fuck, some poor soul needs to get somewhere very quickly. Yeah. But I don't consider like the fucking technical specifications and how it was used.
Well, I think it's just because someone wanted to draw that plane, and because it had no purpose, like, they just stuck it on. And I guess if you've listened to the audio commentary on Beautiful Dreamer, it makes even more sense, because when he's talking about why they drew all the Second World War German infantry stuff. His explanation was, there's no great satire going on here. We just wanted to draw tanks.
Yeah. I appreciate the honesty. Yeah.
It did feel a very Pat Labor movie 2-esque shot as well. You know, very ominous as it's moving forward. But it's just kind of, like, with all the text on it, it's just kind of blunting the point a little bit. That's kind of it. It needs to have form, which yourself as well.
Yeah, it's kind of mocking the idea that you're looking for a deeper meaning in something when all we're interested in is the actual vehicle itself.
Oh, see, they put in a bomber plane because that represents the character's inherent in depression, in like the self-violence. It's like, no, we just want to draw a cool plane.
We need a good traditionary shot, kind of arty, so that to be into the gyoza restaurant that they're all going to go to. Or garlic is the only thing on the menu.
Yeah.
Well, garlic's the only thing she orders. I think they had other stuff on the menu. Yes. It's just like, that garlic's really good.
Yes, because I suspect she's suspicious that she's a vampire, and therefore. And then we get like the little things about all her little phrases, like a cat needs money, and then imagines Puss in Boots.
Legally distinct.
Yes.
Legally distinct animation studio mascot.
But hey, it just doesn't. Eating it does not affect her in a overly negative way. It just is another thing which makes her drunk, but an angry drunk this time.
Mm. More, you take fucking angel dust because she starts to smash in the place off.
Yeah, they got the gyoza early because that's a quick one to do, but it's like, where's my garlic fried rice, motherfucker, kind of shit. It's like, the businessmen in the corner going like, oh shit, we gotta get out of here.
It's like, man, please calm down. Get the fuck out of my face, you infected dick chef, you. And then the other two guys, just got an infected dick.
They're there for the goss as well, yeah.
And then we get a section where the doctor and Bamba are trying to figure out what exactly is the nature of vampires? And more specifically, what is the nature of this real vampire we've now come across?
Mm-mm.
Which...
Does she appear in mirrors? No.
How about photographs? Also no.
But hang on a minute. Wasn't she in the newspaper?
Started by her photo getting in the paper.
Yeah.
I don't know. Next test.
Crossing running water. Yeah, easy. Daylight doesn't like it, but doesn't kill her. So, you know, no problem there. Crosses, loves them.
Very cute, very chic.
And then they're like, okay, so what do you know about vampires? And then Bamba runs through all the cinema and Bram Stoker things, of which the Doctor sneers at. And then she runs through all the actual folklore explanation of vampires and explains exactly what it really was, how a vampire myth would come about.
Using like a Japanese version of a vampire, basically. Yeah.
Quite interesting, actually, you know. And it's like trying to explain, oh, this is like, you know, people trying to rationalize the imminent death that usually surrounded them back in the Middle Ages.
Yes.
I was reading about, coincidentally, because I fucking read anything, about Bram Stoker's Dracula and like possible inspirations of it. And one of them was like them interpreting his mom telling him stories of, I was like, Fire Darragh or something like that. You know, the red man. It's a bloodsucker, basically.
Yeah.
Irish vampires. But also, like, Protestant guilt over being of the privileged class and seeing, like, the famine and seeing land ownership and that kind of stuff. And I was just like,
that's an
interesting idea. You might be reaching a little, but it's an interesting idea of how to deal with that kind of survivor's guilt trauma, that kind of
thing. Yeah, so the gentry, the land of gentry.
Yeah, the guilt over
robbed all this land by their ancestors did centuries ago, and they've just been born to privilege, and they're seeing like the people who work on their land that suffer and die.
You've seen the people who feed off those people. Yeah, yeah.
You could have like generations of the same family working on your land, and like their granddad worked for you, their father worked for you, and then you're still alive to see all of those guys live and die working tilling your fields. Yeah.
Yeah, and I do like it when, I know it's like nerdy as shit, but I do like it when stories refuse to say the word zombie in a zombie story, that kind of thing. It's like, look, what's the rules with these zombies? What's the rules with these vampires? And actually like discuss the nature of it. And I was like, I'm fucking here for this. This is great.
Of course, yeah.
So they sum up what it is that they know about her. And then the second half, they run into another weirdo. This time it's the cosplay club captain who drags them
both up. Of these girls are enamored with our vampire girl, obviously.
Yes, I think this feels fairly clear. yes.
Well, this one literally just wants to dress her up and take pictures, so yeah.
Yes, and then eventually dresses Bamber up as, God, what's his name? Stryker from UFO.
Yeah, behind my head there.
Yes.
And then,
and
I was looking at it and I was like, wait, hang on a fucking second. And then they just started more and more talking about it. I was just like, god damn, you can't just literally do that, lads. They can dress the vampire up as Lilith. They don't give a fuck.
Yeah, that's the punchline. There's literally that sign where they've changed it from the film studio to an animation studio. Because if you're not familiar with UFO, they're a secret organization protecting the Earth from aliens who are hidden behind the facade of a movie studio.
So they can say it's like, oh, we were doing a special effects shoot or something like that. I watched the shit out of that show. I wished I watched it when I was a little kid. I watched it when I was way too probably old for it, but I did thoroughly enjoy it. It is way hornier when I went back to Photoshop my background in this. I was like, I forgot how horny this fucking thing was. Jeez.
That's how you get Evangelion. By
the 70s.
yep.
That amount of horniness. And then they have a big cosplay concert where people are dressed as various characters.
Is this a thing they're going to get in trouble for? It feels like a thing they're going to get.
Yeah, there's a couple of Tatsunoku characters. There's
Sexy Robocop.
A Pikachu. There.
There's
Mario.
One of the girls is dressed as Tingle from Legend of Zelda.
Are you sure? I think she's dressed as what's her name? Akubi-chan from the Tatsunoko Genie show.
Well, they'll probably do better than trying to do something Nintendo, but I'm pretty sure I did see a Mario there as well.
There was definitely a Mario.
Mario was definitely
See, I was like, okay, they fucking, like, Nintendo will come after you guys. Don't do it.
Fucking Capcom for us, because my costume when everybody goes, it's just like, that's this Morrigan from Darkstalkers. There's just really, like, you've changed almost nothing about that.
Also, yeah, the captain of the cosplay club shows up dressed as Mega Man, right?
Well,
I think there could go some leeway there. It could be any robot because it isn't quite the right shape of the helmet. You know, it could be like Mighty Number 9.
The cinema club captain's there because she's filming it all. And she's annoyed. She's got to take pictures of these disgusting boys.
Gotta get the audience shots.
The dance captain, the dance club captain's there because she's taught the choreography to everybody else. The karate club are there, and they've tied up the class president because she'd tell them all off and hit them with her tin, which by the end of the episode she has done that. And the doctor's there because she's come to draw blood by going to get these teenage boys too excited.
By pressing in fetish gear.
And then I was like, this was the point when she revealed under her trench coat that she'd got a leather basque and stockings and suspenders. I was like, oh, what's the guy? The Project Aiko guy who also worked on Eurosight Asura with these guys. I said, did they bring him on as board as well? Because that's very much his thing.
Fetish consultant, yeah.
underwear consultant. He's the Agent Aika guy. Agent Aika, he then did something called Lingerie Office.
Okay.
That's a straight up porno, isn't it?
That one is, yes. Who's just slowly working himself towards the porno.
Who the real money is.
But yeah, that reveal, I was like, okay, I don't know if he is on board or not. He doesn't have a Twitter for me to find out. But I was like, okay, that's very much in his line of thinking. But maybe it's just in their line of thinking as well, and they always just got him to do the horniest bits of Eurosites era.
Mm. He's probably not allowed to have a Twitter, but you get to spend it immediately while he posts up there.
Sure.
Ed ends in a massive brawl, and they destroy the venue they've rented out.
Mm. Yeah, and we get another flash headlines thing. It's like a school auditorium collapses.
Mass hallucinations.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, Mai does turn into loads of bats, so we've also confirmed that she can turn into animals. There's another one.
They were questioning whether she could turn into bats and wolves, and it's like, that seems silly.
Yeah. It seems to be like, end on a bit of a dramatic note. It was like, oh my god, people were injured in that crash. I fervently wish to just forget that happened entirely by next episode. So like, nope, straight back into the search shenanigans.
Don't
try and put any kind of little, we have an ongoing dramatic like background plot here. Like, no, don't do that, please.
It looks like lots of pipe labor references and also more Capcom references, as someone appears to be dressed as Chun-Li.
Yes, excellent.
I am enjoying just how daft it is.
I mentioned last week, they were doing like the kind of the character, like kind of picture in picture, were just off their face, but it wasn't really moving too much. But they were still doing that, but a lot more going on in the middle of the frame, particularly in the restaurant when Mai is just wigging out on garlic food. That's more. They're just kind of sitting, even static. It's good.
It's a good device. So like they seem to be using it in unique ways, not just relying on it entirely for cheapness. Obviously, it is a thing that it lets you do a thing a little easier, doing shot and shot. But they're using it
as well. Well, that panel is like something that the rest of the characters in frame are able to like manipulate and intrude upon, where it's just this like isolated box of just her face. It's like, no, people are just kind of getting squashed out of the way. They're reaching in and grabbing things inside there. It's like, yeah, that's good.
It's very fun and cartoony with it.
But they make up for some of that by having lots of static pin-up shot stuff in the second half with the cosplay.
I mean, this show has something to appeal to a lot of people. It's got a lot of fast rapid-fire jokes. It's like being geeky about vampires. It's going to reference UFO for me specifically. Yes. Who else is this for? What the fuck? it's got a lot of stuff where it's like, oh, I like that bit. Yeah.
Then we've got back into the actual weekly stuff. Pui Pui Molcar, episode 8, Mission Mol. Oh, sorry, Mol Mission, the other way around. Mol Mission.
Mm.
In which the sparkling, long-haired, now completely bleached Molcar has been...
I didn't realize it was the same Molcar. Yeah, that makes sense.
It
has different hubcaps now. It had fancier hubcaps because it's playing the damsel in distress, I guess.
It's been kidnapped by evildoers. As will become clear on next week's episode, there are continuity through all of these episodes.
Oh, yes. Excellent. Exciting. I haven't watched it because I know I'd be too excited to talk about it if I did.
So it's up to Teddy and Choco to the rescue.
They've got scouters, so they can do spy stuff. They got a mole car helicopter. It's just a regular helicopter. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I know you want a leap. I got to leap from outside the stratosphere to land up this building. This is a sneaking mission, Teddy.
I thoroughly enjoyed any movement of the goon baddies with the guns. I don't know, something about the way those little fucking static figures gesticulated was really amusing to me.
This is kind of just waggling around. It's just
and it's like, hur, hur, but just turning with a whole giant gun like taped to their model hand. Very funny.
And their planet, I don't know, is just like, just top bubble out. Yes. Profit. I don't know how we're going to make money off this mole car. We're going to make his hair into wigs, something like that. We'll figure it out. But money is worth the money.
Yeah. There's a key step missing. But the lads come in through the air ducts, as you do, because it's a spy mission. And when they arrive, they're kind of like, oh shit, cars, we got to get out of here.
Yes.
why did the air ducts that big? I don't understand. Need more air? It's hot in here in the summer.
Yeah.
They break out. They're fleeing, but then they're about to get back in the helicopter when it gets blown up by a giant flying shark straight out of Darius.
Oh, a shark.
And then that's when we get the Akira slide from Teddy.
Yep.
The amount of smoke special effects and the lit from within smoke special effects, they're fucking gorgeous in this. They look so good.
It's just so sweet as well. Like, this is one that the producer in the interview we were talking about last week was so excited about. The helicopter was in flames, it's crashing down.
Yeah.
The blades go by and just do like the fun action movie slow motion.
They did the action movie slow motion, barely missed the mole car, but it's still going like, just walking along. It's so good. And it is very, like, the animation is very good, but also it's really funny and cute at the same time as well. So yes. Just successful everywhere. It's amazing.
Yeah, so the shark dives beneath the street, chases Teddy, flips him into the sky, but Teddy's got a surprise for him as he shits a bomb into his mouth.
Like, I was like, did he just eject his warp core into that shark? What the fuck is going on in the show?
Well, a standard mole car agent loadout right there.
It goes down, but then they see the fin coming towards them out of the smoke. But it's Teddy wearing the fin.
Yeah.
They all have a good laugh. Fade to credits.
Again, the day is saved by Pooey Pooey Mulcair.
Yeah, it's a technical masterpiece, this episode, even more than the previous ones.
And the other ones weren't fucking any slouches, but it's just, no. This one's really showing off. Like, yeah,
it's the wool explosions, it's the camera turns.
Yeah,
it's good to be kind of pushing your craft, and maybe stop motion is kind of pigeonholed as it being one thing. You know, okay, do cute little cartoons like this, but like you still like doing some kind of cool little stunts and making good use of the models are looking great, the sets are good, how they work the camera around those as well. You know, it's all very well blocked out. You know, it's for a cute little 2.5 minute little short thing, a lot of effort, a lot of thought, a lot of innovation has gone into this.
Unlike the other things, which I always feel bad of, the shorts that we do, that we take longer than the episode to describe what happens in the episode. In this, it's like, you could fucking spend ages analyzing this. Beautiful. Yeah.
As long as we talk for less time than it took to make.
That's true.
Okay. That is true. Problem.
I do wonder like how much of a Nick Park is an influence, because he's the other guy who does action movie stuff with stop motion.
Like the shark I was nearly thinking was I've forgotten the dog's name from A Close Shave, the robo dog,
Gromit.
Yeah.
The dog's name from A Close Shave. The robot.
I know it's a shark and everything, but just like the big
it's a
jaw
pun, isn't it? I think it's another pun.
Yeah, it is. I can't remember what the hell the name is though, but off the top of my head. But yeah, I was thinking, you see A Town Called Panic, and I could easily see like Aardman and other sort of stop motion references being in it. But it's definitely its own thing as well, of course.
Oh, it's not a pun. Preston.
just
Preston.
He does I guess spoilers. I think he does get like killed like the Terminator in a press, doesn't he?
I believe so. Yes.
Yes,
that's a Terminator reference, so it's fine. I've spoiled two movies for you. Sorry.
Oh no! 30 me from 30 years ago, I'd be so mad.
I was going to say, and A Close Shave is now approaching 26 years old. So.
It is retro anime.
Continually fucking wonderful show.
It is. Next up is Dr. Stone, episode 7, Secret Mission. What is the secret mission? Well, the secret mission is, you know, all those statues that Tsukasa's smashing as I left you way, way back 26 episodes ago, whatever it's been. I want you to go and collect all those pieces and glue them back together.
Because that's like, it's two parts thing. It's one from Is it Uko? No, what's the hearing guy's name? No.
Ukyo, the stoner Ukyo. Operator.
It's like why he would flip sides, and also, like, because he says it's like, oh, it must have been your guys inside Senku that gave me the battery. And he's like, no, they're too busy. And I was like,
One's an idiot, one's too busy.
yeah, pretty much. One wouldn't have thought of that. The other one is smart, but doesn't have time to do that. And it's, I'm glad it really gives her, like, the anime thing of, like, she's not the best fighter or anything. She's really good at craft works, really good with her hands. But it gives her something to do that's, like, really kind of amazing, and it makes her stand out from everyone else.
It plays to her strengths, and plays to what kind of character she is, because anybody they de-petrify, they're going to be the best of the best at whatever that they do.
Yeah.
The best they want to do, which in her case is being crafting. Handicaps, so got her to, like, employed into the Castle Empire. She's, like, sewing clothes, and she's good at that. She does make little outfits, but she can do all her work in, like, you know, in, like, under an hour. What's she spending the rest of her time on? She's like, she's crafty. She's good at those large puzzles. Loves, like, gluing all this matter, just, like, back together piece by piece.
And he was following her because he heard the stones rattling in her bag. He's like, well, what she needs stones for? She's going sewing. And when she's finished her sewing way earlier than anyone would expect, she's gone into a cave and putting people back together. Because Senku said, as long as the outside isn't eroded, they can potentially be put back together. So if you gather together the pieces before they erode with time and weather, they're still revivable.
Yeah, that's why Yuki has approached him now, because he's not an idiot. You can see that they've got, like, a fucking telephone set up at the graveyard that they can communicate with. If you want to suss what kind of dude is Senku and all the gang in the Kingdom of Suns, what are they kind of like? What's their goal? What's their, like, frame of mind here? And he cops immediately. It's me. It's Lillian Weinberg. We're coming from America because they're up and running. We're going to save everybody. He says, yeah, you're just singing a song there. But he says in English, but your voice, it doesn't have the enthusiasm of after singing a song.
Yeah, her voice isn't slightly strained from singing it so loudly and so passionately. You should be a little vocally tired from it. And you're not, I'm not picking up that in the timbre in your voice. And they're like,
yeah.
Capped onto us, but he did say that in English so no one else would understand it.
Yeah, they are equally clever and suspicious men. And yes, it turns out, Ukyo's heart is in the same place Senku's is. We learned that essentially the reporter character, whose name I can't remember, is the one responsible for basically who's getting picked to be turned.
I honestly really like that as a thing, because it's not like Tsukasa knows all these people like he was on a talk show with Gen, so he knew him. But it's just like she has interviewed interesting people. And it's like, okay, so I've interviewed people who are the best in their field, so I can tell you that guy's good at listening.
He's a young, idealistic sonar operator who presumably joined the Navy because he wanted to help people. Because he didn't want to kill nobody.
And then based off the shot of him, like, responding to a disaster, that seems to be the case, yeah.
Yeah, he had already left the Navy, so I assume he had left the Navy because he's a pacifist, and then turned his skills to being search and rescue instead.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing he makes clear. Yes, he'll do a deal as long as nobody is killed, and he's like, and Sega's like, well, that's what I was aiming for. So now it's just rather than an ideal, it's now a requirement. Excellent, we're all on the same side.
We were going that direction anyway, but we're just like, if we can, but now, okay, yeah, we'll just work harder towards it. Sure.
Yes, and more importantly, we now get an idea of, well, we already know how much of a dick Hyoga is. But now Tsukasa's beginning to get an idea of how much of a dick Hyoga is when Yo fakes his own death.
I've been wearing this eye thing just as a fucking wave faking my own death one day when I fuck up.
That's also what Ukyo brings up, because those dudes know when Hyoga went to the boys to attack the village and a bunch of our fellas got gassed to death. Was that you? Since said, nah, man, freak accident. Could happen to anybody. Actually, you're wrong. It was Hyoga who let him into that mess.
Hyoga came back and said, Senku killed them using science traps. And it's like, did you kick them off the tree, though? I think you did.
Yes. And so as a reader, if you're a new reader, it was helpful at that point to be reminded of that. But it's helpful to put it back into your head when later on, when Tsukasa is going to honor Yo's memory by burying him alongside. He names all the guys who died.
Freddy, yes. Billy, Joe Jack.
And Hyuga does not remember their names.
And then like, despite the fact they were his squad, basically.
Yes. But then, of course, as he's burying the thing, he discovers the
telephone.
The telephone, yes. and yanks the wire all the way to pull the phone, which Senku has written Senku on, just to further taunt him.
It's much better that he kind of writes on everything just to let the homies know who did it.
So they're going to take the cave with the revival fluid by using the tank, and they've made a way for it to fire once.
I do like that. Yes, we'll peacefully take the thing without loss of life. We have met a tank that can shoot a gun once, but you know, once is all you need.
Yeah. It's a tank we didn't know we were going to have at this stage. We were actually fairly ahead in this. Also, we got a full deck, because who comes out of the trees? It's Taiju and Yuzuriha. We got the full squad back in. God, dodge this hug. Hang on a minute, because Taiju's a bit handsy, but that have him back. He was the biggest, strongest, dumbest guy I can think of to get to his mission.
And they do explain the nature of it, that, what is it, like human reactions only last for
20 seconds,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's human initial reactions only last 20
yeah.
seconds.
You act on instinct for 20 minutes. Yeah, 20 seconds, right?
Probably psychoanalyst Stephen Acker, who conducted the study back in America back a few decades ago. This is what it is. So we'll create panic, but as soon as they kind of figure out what's going on, they'll probably turn back against us. But we'll decide this in those 20 seconds. The fate of humanity, mind you, we'll decide it in the 20 seconds.
Yes. and they've got loads of... They have brought loads of people onto their side via that record before. Yukio had got them sussed.
And it's lots of people going like, yeah, so America's okay, so that means the whole world will be okay. Oof, I don't know about that now. But the idea that it's just like, they're like, oh, yes. I mean, like, Tsukasa's strong and all, but he can't stand up to the entire country of the US.
Yes, but they're like, well, we'll be a while before we're there, so in the meantime, just do everything Senku says.
And also, could you... before we get there in the rescue operation... We'd like you to stop breaking statues or stop Tsukasa. Yes. So if you could just switch sides a little bit, that'd be great. And they're all like, yeah, that's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, it is definitely fascinating, like, for what is an action shonen comic, how little fighting there is.
Yeah.
Because in this week's chapter in the Shonen Jump, it's finally fighting for the first time in forever. And it's almost pornographic hell the characters who are about to leap into fighting get. In terms of them stripping themselves naked in order to fight.
Wasn't the last fighting thing like on that island?
Yeah.
An
arc ago, yeah.
Mm.
Otherwise it tends to be, oh, we can't get past this fight, so we'll surrender. Let's get to a place
we'll think
where
our way around this we have situation.
That's a bit more interesting, because there's oodles of comics that are about fighting, about you get to this battle using your guts and your fighting spirit and, you know, your will to win, etc., etc. Like, no, this is about kind of like finding another solution that will circumvent the actual need for that. And that's as well what Senku made his idea for the world as well, is that, I might bring the war back, but there's a lot of like war and conflict and needless suffering and grief and pain inflicted. If we're going from the start, why don't we figure out another way to get to that stage without the need to speak of conquest and bloodshed? If we knew then what we know now, how would things have turned out?
Yeah.
I do wonder if that's going to be similar to the motivation of why man turning people into stone in the first place, though.
Yeah. I feel like that, since that's like the theme of scientific progress leads to peace and harmony and good stuff, and it's like, yeah, but also the opposite.
Yes,
in its own way. So yeah, it's probably going to be part of the overall.
That's a long, long way off in the anime and in the comic. Though the comic moves with such speed nowadays, it might not seem...
God, who fucking knows?
But this feels like it moves at... Even in the anime, it feels like it moves at rapid speed.
It's an exponential progress. Like, they just build on what they made before. So we already explained how the steam engine works. So You know, you've been to primary school, hopefully. You can kind of see how they will get from there to there.
Yes.
You know, fill in the gaps yourself or ask a teacher. Who knows?
Like in terms of like speed, like this season is it what, like 2 or 3 years after Senku has woken up? Something like that, isn't it?
It's about a year, I think.
Because I thought Senku would live like a year.
Because he had his birthday.
And he revived his friend and they live for a year. And then this is the winter. This is coming out of another winter. So that's like 3 winters.
He just had his birthday at the end of the last season. So
Yeah. It's still a long fucking time, you know.
Like, it is, yeah.
3,500 years young.
Anyway, moving on to Heaven's Design Team Idea 8. In which the lads... what are they working on? Oh, yeah. It's Mercury and Jupiter are having a fight.
Oh, yeah.
And this time Jupiter has decided what he'll do is make the modifications to himself.
It's good to feel it out, you know?
Yes. But Mercury just thinks he likes to play.
Yeah.
And he becomes obsessed. He's been told to make an animal which uses bones as a weapon. And he's obsessed with using his ribs as a weapon.
I like the fact they literally say snicked at one point.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, you can tell he just wants to make a Wolverine, but he hasn't quite
figured it out. It's again going, like, much like last week, is saying how invisibility wouldn't work for you at all. It's also why Wolverine wouldn't work, probably.
Yeah.
Healing factor be damned.
Essentially his initial one is he wants, like, ribs which will clamp on people.
Yeah. Because your man's just using, like, snake-style kung fu, and he's just like, I'm going to give you a death hug, and he pulls his ribs out. That was Santana had that power, wasn't it?
One of the Pitter
JoJo.
Men.
Yeah.
Deadly
ribs is his plan. Yeah.
I thought for the longest time, they're making some kind of dinosaur. Like, is it going to be, like, an ankylosaur, a stegosaurus? It wasn't far off.
I only figured it out when they put the shoulder blades inside the rib cage. I was like, I know what this fucking thing is.
Okay. I've seen a dead one of those before.
Yeah.
Yes, he puts his shoulder blades inside his rib cage because they're like, Miles can't wonder how are your arms moving when you.
It's like, yeah, they need the shoulder blades to work. That's why snakes like don't have arms because they can't have shoulder blades. What with their expanding rib cage. Yeah, you're mad about these. You're insisting on these movable ribs. So
yeah, yes, because he's put his ribs on the outside. He's put his spine on the outside at this point. Because because Pluto's brought a lion in to attack him to check the durability.
Not great. He does not stand up very well to the lion.
It's our old friend osteoporosis.
No, it's not. It's because he can't breathe because he's put his ribs on the outside of his body.
He can't he can't move his ribs internally to control his breathing. He does get osteoporosis later when he tries to make the ribs bigger, but
yeah.
I like the little ding dong noise when it finally is osteoporosis.
A running joke that is osteoporosis is very funny as a thing to have in your show. Fucking hell!
It's like in House, but it's like it's always lupus, but there's never lupus.
Yeah,
it's at the one time that it was lupus.
That's how they get you.
Anyway, with like doubling up the bones and various other things, they end up with a turtle. And then they're like, oh, his head's still exposed. And then they think of numerous ways to hide the head, and they come up with multiple different turtles and tortoises.
Approved. Just like,
you're going to get paid today.
And then God reminded him, you're supposed to make something which had bone as a weapon, and I've taken a good look at this turtle.
Which is
have
like
this crappy noose instead.
A good defense is a great offense, but it's not an offense.
Yes. So instead it has to be this newt that he doodled, which uses the same thing that Mercury and Mars had suggested as being the correct way of doing it.
I thought for sure it was going to be like Pachycephalosaurus.
They have
skull as a weapon smashing into you.
Just a bone club on the fucking end of its tail. It's like
ankylosaur. I thought as well, just with the shape of the ribs kind of poking out, I thought, oh yeah, it's kind of spicing about the sides. Could be an ankylosaurus. So I could be something.
Maybe they have to do like actual animals we can see and stuff, because dinosaurs are still like, we don't even know if they're feathers entirely. We know these ones probably had feathers, but we're not sure about this one. You know.
And then they discuss the factual part of the program.
Yes.
Yeah, he pokes its ribs through its skin, which they'd mentioned earlier, that you would have to be a regenerating amphibian to do that properly. And they're like, well,
they don't even poke out very far. They're just really pointy.
But they're poisonous. And then Jupiter complains about this. And they're like, Mars is like, you tried to eat it, didn't you?
His voice is getting more and more muffled as the bit goes on, because his cheeks are just kind of swelling in the little chibi form. That was very funny. Yeah.
And then we've got Neptune and the seal he's working on.
Hmm. Oh, God, it's a very specific thing God is asking for. To show love with...
And it causes a throb.
Interpret
that as you will.
Don't be weird and corny with it.
Porting that causes a throb, that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
So they knock... The others were supposed to be there, but so they knock on their doors to see what they're up to. Venus sings them a song... And does a dance, which is all about like a bird displaying, but also then it's like it's a bird display who then will get a younger bird to sing with them.
Yeah, what do you call that? An understudy, basically.
It shows a different bird like how to dance, and by comparison, the first bird looks a lot better.
Because that's the problem. It's like Venus. I can't tell how good your singing is because there's no one else singing. It's just like, yeah, you're the only person singing here, so you're automatically going to win. So it's like, so I need someone who's worse than me. It's like, but why would they team up with you? Because by understudying with me, they'll become better, and one day they'll be the number one, and they'll take an understudy.
This is the long-tailed mannequin. At breeding time, males are involved in a cooperative lecking behavior with a complex coordinated courtship dance.
Birds are fucking weird, man.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's a fairly common species and has conservation status of being least concern.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
Yes,
sorry.
No, this one's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
This one does a splendid job with its dance.
That was a fun one. I don't think I knew that bird. So that was a cool one to learn about. But what are they doing in the next room? Oh, they're not doing the big song and dance number. They're doing a rap battle.
Yes.
And I love our angel boy getting involved in all of these. And you can see him just going like, oh, my God, this is rap. I know what this is. I've studied this.
Can't tell them, though. I'm really amusing the last bit. So no matter what kind of noise, if even the suggestion of something violent might be happening, Neptune is busy. Lucille Powers going, oh, no. Covering the eyes of the seal. You can just can't have his innocent heart to see this.
And he protects them when the rocks are about to fall on their heads. And then we get into whatever species of frog does like a...
It's like a kicking contest that they don't actually kick each other.
Do the leg up, you know, while it's cooler. It's like,
really flex those muscles.
It is an action, huh?
The lads are basically going to get in a physical battle when the rap battle doesn't work out. But a rock falls and he kicks it away, and then both the lads fall in love with him. Because, you know, it's just like, damn, that was hot. It's like, that's what we need, a fight where nobody gets hurt. And so they invent a new kind of sexy-legged frog.
Yes.
I don't think that's what it's called.
Stauroi, a small genus of minuscule true frogs.
Okay.
Most are in Borneo, two are in the Philippines. Let's see how these lads are doing. They seem to be least concerned as well.
Oh, thank goodness. That was a worry, isn't it?
That could be an added feature of these reviews. See how these animals are doing.
Life finds a way.
But what did they end up making with their rap battle? Or did they? Were they just trying to? They were trying to do a variation on frogs because frogs.
They were yes.
Just frogs figured it out. So that's basically what their croaking is. It's just their like who do like have you know
the lowest register,
louder and faster and that. But it's got to think, what are we gonna do with this seal though? Gotta figure out what's going on with the seal. I like what Venus is doing when the birds are transformed into like a more elaborate bird. Maybe we can figure out something like that.
Could I inflate it? It's like, no, then I need to take out the ribs like in the past part, and we need those ribs. And then he makes things that just like fix themselves, which is a great fucking design. I mean, I guess it makes you feel really stupid, but it's just like, dude, you already made it perfect. You don't need to do anything else to it.
Yes, they make the hooded seal. who can inflate the membrane above his nose. And if that's not good enough, can then... inflates the skin above his nose, and if that's not good enough, inflates the membrane between the left and the right nostril, which then makes your nose hurt as you think about it. And it's true. It's just...
Yeah, because it's basically like, turn the inside of your nose and keep blowing your nose so that the inside of your nose comes outside. And I was just like, oh, God, that sounds horrible. It's like, yeah, it doesn't look great neither.
And then shaking back and forth to make a drumming sound.
Yeah. And again, they talk about it as like, so basically it's a physical contest is what he's thinking. It's just like, so like for a seal, holding your breath is really good. So it's like a breath holding contest because it is all about the breathing and the nasal passage and all that kind of jazz. So I was like, that you can see where this evolutionary idea started, as in being good at breathing is good for a seal, then crazy inflatable nose eventually.
for all that, it all goes back to sex.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, like everything does. That's what all of these are about. It's like, let me show you how fucking good I am at breathing, therefore how good my babies would be at breathing. Yeah. manages to be not very horny, except when the lads get horny for Neptune or
Pluto.
Yeah.
Oh, and then Neptune. Yes, Neptune. They think they're getting horny for Pluto, and then they're getting horny for Neptune. Yes.
I did that nice reversal. It's just like, you know, she's a bit young. It's like, but that guy's fucking huge and jacked. It's like, yeah, okay.
He's all about non-violence, but under that cardigan, he's got packing some guns, some real firepower.
When he was making seals, I was like, fucking seals are very violent. Don't they bite each other and stuff? And I was like, oh, okay, he did make a kind of seal
they
that wasn't.
Eat the shit out of each other. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't that like the seals have like big coats so they can actually like tear into each other and everything without doing extreme amounts.
They'll draw a hell of a lot of blood, but we'll walk away from that more or less. But then you get kind of cool, scared up seals like it's some kind of fun wild Pokemon or something.
Yeah, so I guess he makes cute but tough things, yeah.
Mm. I know it's the next episode though. There appears to be a penguin which has human proportioned legs.
Oh, is that going to be like one of those ancient penguins? You know, the ones that like it was like an emperor penguin, but it was big as a man.
I assume they're just trying to make it penguin, and at some point they're going to have to realize they're going to have to make it smaller.
Miniaturization is the way of the future.
Sure. Yeah. Or are you going to kind of hide the legs within, like, you know, that penguin shape of the body? Oh, he's got no legs, right? No, you just don't see him. Kind of like with the owl, you know. Owls have like long, spindly legs as well, but you wouldn't know because they're coated in like a lot of downy fluff feathers.
But it's very much, I assume it's because, like the owl and the penguin, they're a thing that humans connect to because they have a similar shape to us.
Yeah. But when you start breaking it down, they're freaky aliens dressed as humans.
This is like a thing in paleontology, or we think dinosaurs, or at one point thought dinosaurs looked like that because we're just like imagining the skin fitted them like, you know, like a fucking latex suit. We look at something like the skeleton of like a gorilla or a bird. If you did the same thing, you look at some kind of fucking goblin or hell creature. But we don't. It looks like a cute little gorilla or a monkey. So what's all the extra thing like cartilage or muscle or flesh that's obviously dissolved? We had the skeleton left. There could have been things in the way there that gave it like a cute dinosaur face instead. We don't know. Like you're saying, with the feathers and so forth, could be anything there. Did you raise out?
Yeah. I do love this show. It continues to be good. It's not exactly the most amazing looking thing, but like when you see an angel get really excited to beatbox, I'm just like, you don't get that in anything else.
It's consistent though. It's not like you come to an episode
no,
and go,
drop considerably
this
by
one
any
looks
stage,
worse.
No. Mm, mm, mm.
Then we've got Jujutsu Kaisen, episode 20, non-standard.
Is this lock of the week for me? It's pretty close.
Like
it's all about Todo. Is it Todo is maybe the main man here? Like, Itadori is there also. But man, it's about.
I mean, the end of it is about your man breaking through the barrier, and that's like it keeps cutting to different fights, and the fact that the barrier drops. It's like, okay, now he's in. Fights are over, boys. But it is Todo, and about his extremely high. Was it 530,000 IQ? I believe.
IQ can only go up to 200 by definition.
I know. And he keeps saying this, and it sounds like, and you know, there's disclaimers coming up on the screen saying, it's like it's self-proclaimed. we haven't fucking said this.
Yes.
But then he does things like where he constructs an entire scenario that his idol comes into the school alternate reality that he's written for himself. And she's like, actually, that's why this power wouldn't work like that. You need to adjust your tactics. He's like, oh, you're right. Thank you. I'll go to your next thing, which I believe is in the Tokyo Dome on January 8th. Okay, I've just marked that in my calendar.
Thank you for that.
And all of this happens in 0.01 of a second. Like, all this entire scenario he's constructed in order to dodge one attack.
Yeah. Well, it's like revealing his technique. It's Hanami is there. He's like, oh, Hanami, this cursed spirit that all these moves. It has the left arm out now. It's got no
what the left arm
going
does.
On with there. But it's actually my technique. So, Itadori, whatever happens, let's rush it. Let's rush at this thing. And trust me. And they go rush him, go buy the business to him, and then clap, swap places. Hanami thinks I want to, like, you know, throw Itadori into, like, some spike roots of his conjure up in the air, but it's like, clap. I'm impaled on spike roots. How did that happen? His cursed technique. It swaps places where I am. That's how it works. It's like, yep, that's all that does. No other tricks to that. No siree.
And it's like, keeps, well, that seems fairly simple. But then, like, they're kind of like double teaming him and, like, hitting him at both sides. But every time he claps and switches, it's like, but I have to adjust to their completely different frames each time. And that, like, that split second of indecision is like, wait a minute. Okay, so I was going to punch here, but now he's up here because he's taller. And I was like, shit, okay. And that makes you reconsider your thoughts. And it's just enough to get the shit kicked out of him.
And it's like, it is a fun, oh, this is how my cross technique works, you know, and demonstrating that seems to be how it works. But it's also feeding into, it has come up before, like, yeah, sometimes you don't want to reveal how your technique works through another of your opponents. But by revealing it, you make my force them to think along certain lines, and they think, oh, they got it all figured out. But no, there are rules to this, because Told always swapping around for Hanami and Yuji here. He's swapping two people at once and moving them around. He's swapping objects from one place to another.
He's swapping him. He doesn't have to be part of the swap. Also, and as he does one time, he claps and then turns around to face our boy running out of him and is just like, oh, wait, you didn't switch, and then gets hit in the back of the head. I can just clap normally, dude. It's like, God, this guy.
Essentially what they're doing is that between him and Itadori, they have a Konami and an infinite juggle combo in the corner.
Yeah.
Just not letting him out of it. I mean, they welcome back to the river, and then it's like, you know, clap, Itadori is over in the river. But remember when Fushiguro, he lost the tree section staff and they lost in the river earlier on? That's in Tolo's hands right now. Choo, 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 choo. Whammo! so satisfying.
There's a lot of fun with the technique, and visually, yeah, it works really nicely. And there are, like, two cool fucking, not including the principal who plays, like, electric guitar to fucking use his technique. There's two really good action-y songs to fights in this.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, it's excellent.
And all kind of happen in no confrontations. They have that craftsman dude who wants to make a court wreck out of Gojo. Hanami is just like, hey, fuck this. I'm going to absorb the life from the plants, like, close by and power it up, and Bulbasaur's going to use solar beam on you. But then, bang, the veil comes down. And you think, what is going on here? Also, Utahime, the teacher from Kyoto, has run into one of the other boys whose name I've forgotten. He's a little kind of weedy chump. Like, check out my cool sword, right? At the hilt,
his sword
like
is holding his hand.
It holds my hand. The craftsman die guy made it for me. It's like, because you're kind of wimpy, so you need the sword to hold your hand because you're a little bit of a wuss.
And as soon as the veil comes down, he's like, oh, brilliant, look at all these girls just here for me, even though the other girls are here to, like, specifically mock him. But he's not listening to them.
Maki and I keep forgetting her name. Kukisaki have shown up as well. So I want to beat the shit out of you.
And he's just like, all these girls here for me. I'm really popular. And it's like, motherfucker, you're not listening to me. But as soon as the veil comes down, he's just like, I'm going to leave. And he just runs the fuck away. They're like, oh, that was easy.
It's Gojo sense. He's cracked the veil that he should not be allowed to get into. And he's just going, it's all up in the sky, because he's the blindfold up, and to see his beautiful sparkly eyes, which you can survey all before him and think, who should I mess up right about now?
What's the correct order for me to kick these guys' ass in? Hops down to the principal, and as he's about to fucking kill him, the principal's like, don't fucking kill him, we need to ask him questions.
Gotcha.
So he just explodes his arms and legs while he's just screaming. He's like, okay, you get this guy some medical attention, I'm gonna fuck off. And at that point, we're still at the lads fighting our plant guy. And our boy's about to step forward. He's like, no, don't move an inch. Otherwise, the attack will hit you as well.
And like, Admi's like, forget this. I'm out of here. Peace out. I'm going to crawl to my pub. And then Gojo's going, red over here, a blue over here. They put them together, they make a purple. And a wave of destruction, fucking like a mega smasher from the guy, bro, just erases the landscape.
Yeah. Because it was nice the way he could see from the air that all the plants had been like absorbed and they all died. So he knew where to fucking aim this thing. But the problem is, it's just like, your man's just like, oh, that's just like him over fucking shooting as usual. We can't even tell if he hit the fucking curse because everything is obliterated in this straight fucking line. Yeah.
We get the mechanics that they explain a little later on in program. I always know the because Gojo's, again, he's another like power that's, it's fairly simple, but the application of it, like Todo's, is where it matters, because you can, it's all about like infinite space. So on the one hand, you can infinitely contract space. That's how he muss up that dude's arms and legs, to smash them up.
Yeah.
Also, infinitely expand space. So when you put them together, it's two opposing forces. They explode outwards in the purple fucking haze of death.
Yeah. Like, excellent fucking show.
It's a bit like, you know, like your big brother's coming down to the playground to beat up all these kids who've been messing with you. Very triumphant, very cool. And again, keep up the level of quality. And I think this might have elevated in some degrees the material in the comic for this, in terms of the scale of the spectacle that's putting out there. It's just so really, really fun. It's really fun to watch and look at, but it's also funny, you know. We were fighting like evil cursed spirits that would toss us fucking around, clapping his hands, he's making faces, he's messing around with this evil monster.
It's not as much where it currently is in the manga, right. But one thing I do appreciate of the series is it being like super dark, but also constantly having stupid characters doing dumb shit and making jokes. And this does that balance quite well.
The Juju Stroll thing, very important question that we must go by all of our characters with. You a dog person or a cat person? Dog. No cat. No dog. No cat. No dog. Oh, I don't know. Fushiguro is like, dog, obviously.
Yeah. Seemingly most people are dog people by the end of it, but Panda's overhearing all of this and like, motherfucking nobody said panda. What the fuck? Everyone hates me. Like, dude, it's a binary choice. We can't pick panda.
Well, it's okay, because why pick one? You can have both. Because with a dog and a cat, every day is fun.
Exactly. So the first half is about the previous dog she had when it had puppies. And she's worried as a kid.
She's worried that you're told like a parent dog gets really protective and will snap at you if you go at the puppies. But she was just as loyal as a mother, but also still a mother.
Yes, she was presenting them to her, like, look at this one, look at this one, look at this one.
This one looks cool.
And then, can I have them back now?
He's like, can I have my children back, please?
And that segues nicely into discussion of who has the most power in the family. It is mother, because when the owner tells the cat and the dog off, they don't listen. But when mum tells them off, the dog is so frightened he turns to stone. And the cat just gives in.
The cat has an expression that's like, it isn't worth my time to die for this.
Like, I do like how when the mum's chasing the cat around as it's stolen a loaf of bread. What's it going to do with the loaf of bread? I assume it just wants the plastic bag more than the bread.
Yeah, probably.
Is that the mum and the cat pretty much have exactly the same expression on their face.
That demonic like aura is like running forward like the Terminator. It's like a stupid cat. The bread's still fine in the bag.
I feel like I've seen that, but it's mostly whichever person feeds them is the person they trust the most. That kind of thing.
But they would also fear whoever could take away that feeding from them as well.
That's it. It's respect and trust. Yeah.
Dog, what are you doing? You've made a mess of the house. If I'm saying, I'm listening. I'm a puppy. Dog.
Oh, I'm in trouble though. Trouble with
that little face that he makes as well was really adorable.
Yeah,
I've done it now.
Mm.
Oh,
Good stuff.
Then next up is, I believe, Back Arrow, episode 8. What is the Bloodstained Knight hiding?
I thought this was going one way, but then it went a completely different way by the end of it, so that was nice.
Oh, it's, I think you did a good job seeding that there was something sus about the princess earlier on, because just she's perfectly pleasant and fine in her manner and her manner of speech, but it's just things she's saying or the way she's saying them, it's just like, you could probably be the one who's a bit war hungry or violence hungry here. It's just or there's something within you that's that impulse is there. But one it's of the things hard to detect under that nice facade you've put on board.
One of the things that threw me as well, I was just like, this is super suspect. Where they're a bunch of ladies all having a bath. Ooh, would you guys mind washing my back? It's part of diplomacy. You wash my back, I'll wash yours. And they're all like marveling at her soft princess skin, and it's all like, you know, for the horny people. But then there's actually the thing of like, they wash the princess, and then she's like, cool, all right, I'm glad we got to do our diplomacy. And then she kind of walks away, is like, wait, is she not going to wash our bag? And I was like,
she did say to them there, I thought, well, wash my back, and I will resettle your people in one of the like, you know, many acres we have in our country. And I thought, but is she going to wash our back? Dude, she just resettled her people.
It was the idea that, like, we are naked and entirely presenting ourselves openly and truly. And it was implying that you wash my back, I'll wash yours. But it's more so, be subservient to me was what the actual conversation was and what they were actually doing. Mm-hmm. They were helping her wash, and then she just fucking walks away without helping them. Because they are servants to her. And you help your servants, you pay your servants, but they're still less than you. And I thought that was an interesting way to show that, yeah.
Oh, I suppose that's true as well, because what is, you know, like, resettling these people is a simple, I give that away for a back rub.
Yeah.
That's how little that means to me. Yeah, I can see what you mean there.
And then there'll be her people. They'll still probably have to pay taxes to her and be in reverence to her. You know, you're just gaining more servants, basically. Yeah.
Mm. Meanwhile, Back Arrow is still punching the wall, and
Doc is there as well.
What would you know? The Doc decided to stay behind as well.
Mm. Don't you want to go to Luto? Not right now.
And am I going to continually ponder over Back Arrow saying nothing will change from running away? But then Prax shows up to bring Back Arrow back by force. And Back Arrow is like, well, you know, I could clone myself into five of me, and I could throw four of me up towards you, hop on the backs of the four of them so I can get up close, and then force you to fly me over the wall. And then Prax is like, okay, you little fucker. You want to go and see what's above the wall, do you? There are...
The Laser Death Show.
Yes.
What's up here?
All the stars in the sky are basically like laser mines?
Yes. Hmm. But then another one of the, the Rakuhos flies over.
And that girl's like, sweet, this is my way out.
Grabs I'm out of here.
Fucking... Yeah.
Meanwhile, Shubei is doing some diplomacy/blackmail with the government officials.
All by the orders of the Admiral, obviously. The Admiral's in on every step of this plan.
He's on a secret mission to investigate what's going on. He thinks, there's something going on. I think they might try and bring back Arrow in by force. So you should be there to catch him in the act, Admiral. It's an important mission I need you for. Oh, you need to do, only you can complete. Sorry.
But yeah, talking to the how the premiers, or what do they call them, the top lads who run
the Supreme Six.
Yeah, we've met four of them now, including your one who's actually like a pilot. So it is like a multiple split of power, but the princess is the top of them. There is like one leader above them. Yeah.
We also briefly check in on the western border of Rekka with the western general. And the Emperor. The Western General appears to be more competent and violent in terms of what the Emperor's after, he talks about. Now we've dealt with the rebels here, we can invade Luto.
Mm.
So we'll see how the other two generals, and presumably there must be a southern one who we've not met yet. And yes, then Bits has followed where they took Back Arrow, and he's going to and Shubei excuses himself to go to Grand Edger to get some documentation, so they send some guards to protect him.
Because he was basically like, okay, you guys need to tell me how you enhanced her thing, because I know she couldn't fucking fly before, and obviously she's the only one who can do it, so I can help you develop that technology, and in the meantime, I'll give you all of the secrets of my land, but to prove my good faith, I'm going to give you the secrets of the Grand Edger. Let me just go back and grab that. But, you know, there's a couple of guards going with him.
So a bit will take care of them with this gun he's been learning how to use. He has no recoil. And just gets the shit out of him while Shubei electrocutes them.
And yeah, I did love Shubei kind of going, like, him bit going, like, he's like, well, you were just using me as a fucking, like, as a distraction so you could get him. It's like, yes, Admiral, it was very brave of you to put your life on the line like that. Just like,
I suppose it was, yes.
Just playing him every second. It's great.
Then the science minister is...
I fucking love that guy.
He's delivered Back Arrow by Prax, who is now wearing her mask, and it now has a piece which goes over her mouth, and now her voice sounds like it's being processed. So you're like, this isn't Prax.
Yeah, and then he's like, hey,
trust us, Riker.
Yeah, and you also hear the scientist guy like, hey, we're doing experiments here. You're not supposed to wear the mask in experiments. Ah, it doesn't matter. Music!
Yes. his science choir is the craziest thing in this episode. It's so good.
Electrodes in your head will hurt a lot, but it's for science. Yeah. It's not pain, it's love. Play not love, love not pain.
That was fucking great. I don't think I've ever seen that before, but I need to watch more violent musicals, I guess. Yeah,
I've seen like this mad supervillain and a mad scientist, you know, while they're really in the zone. The pipe got some, like, you know, some...
Like
some
a cool evil villain
some
song.
Some Wagner thing. They're like, you know, conducting as they go, like, as the bombs go off.
But, you know, but not with literally, like, in a non-musical thing, literally having a bunch of dudes singing about the evil signs you're currently doing is pretty great. Yeah.
And you have to put the two electro tubes, and he's going, like, oh, and the one, and the two, and the two.
As he's intermittently stabbing Back Arrow to try and, like, he's like, wait, he doesn't seem to have any fucking
conviction.
So it's just like, maybe if I stab him into his fucking head. So we do see the two lads kind of peeking in the door going like, all right, bit. All right, Admiral, if you can just hit that button there, that'll release Back Arrow. I know you can do it. I believe in you. It's a very simple job. Do not fuck it up. But Bit does hit the target. Back Arrow gets out and stabs the electrodes into the scientist's head, going like, how do you fucking like it? Which is great.
And as they're escaping, Prax shows up. And he
Prax. Wah, wah.
Knocks her mask off and is like, you're not Prax. It's the princess, but with slightly different hair. And then the hair changes back to the normal princess's, and her personality changes back.
And her eyes stop being red.
Yes. But then she turns back to the deeper purple princess with the red eyes again, and declares that
swear words.
Nobody escapes her slaughter.
Yeah, I wasn't quite expecting the split personality part. That was a nice change, but I like you said, I think they really set up well how this place seems super suspect, and yeah, it achieved it very well.
Next episode is called Why Do Lips That Profess Love Hide Fangs?
Why is she like this? What happened to
be like that? Yeah, so I have no idea what's going on. I don't know whether she's somehow both her and Prax merged into one in that form. I don't know.
I don't know. I watched it back trying to see where the switch happened, because we see, like, Prax says, you know, Back Arrow has been de-roboted, and she's bringing it down in her own robot. And it seemed to want to land in strip. No, it's been brought inside. But then next time you see him, he's strapped to the table, and there it's fake Prax, but now like that. It's like, okay, so did, like, real practice, I'm going to leave him down for a minute. I got to go to the toilet. I'll be back in 5 minutes. It's like, hey, where my honored guest go to? He's gone.
Yeah, one of the things I was thinking was that that Prax is in on this, and that's why Prax is wearing the mask thing in order for the princess to be able to dress her, as her. Because her Prax's conviction is to serve the princess, isn't it?
Yes. Maybe it could be like this. Yeah.
But she seems very reasonable, though, beyond that.
Yeah, because she was even willing to bring Back Arrow above the thing to get laser shot at them. So it was like, yeah, we're not fucking getting over the wall, dude.
Fastest
give it up and come back with me.
I think if Prax knew that the princess was muddying and dirtying her hands like this, you'd be one step in to stop it, really.
Yeah, you could be right as well.
I wonder if somebody who wants a more hawkish country has been experimenting on her.
Yeah, similar to the experimenting on the beautiful Bishonen boy.
Yes. Anyway, I'm sure it will be revealed next episode, because this is not a show that drags its heels.
No, it'll be done the first minute of the next episode.
Then we've got Skate to the Infinity, Part 8, The Fated Tournament, in which we learn exactly how messed up Adam is and why he's messed up. And we're introduced to two new skaters, Snake and character pick Harry. Of the year, Harry.
I saw Harry there and I was like, oh, Harry, you're so fucked, dude. He didn't get as fucked up as I thought he would. I thought he was going to fight your man. Your man was basically going to murder him on the fucking track.
I was like, oh, you're going to be easy. He's not trying to do all the theatrics. He's trying to do the business and saying, no, I gotta do this. This is a born real deal right now. I'm gonna skate and I'm gonna win. I'm gonna do all those things like shine a laser in his eyes and all that kind of cheating shit, but I'm gonna win.
Oh, everyone's allowed to cheat. Like, even in the preliminaries, like, you had a bunch of plague doctor mass dudes going like, let's fuck up snow for no reason that I can discern. Get some street cred, I guess.
I guess so. But Adam's problem is that his aunts have raised him to mistake pain for love, and
yeah, that's fucked up.
That is
getting
why
a booter across the wrists.
Yes, he's torturing these, and also that's why he's self-sabotaging his own career in order so that his aunts will, rather than be happy with him, will get angry at him.
Yeah, he's trying to fuck up because they beat him and said, "We do this because we love you." And he took that to heart, and it's like, oh, that's really fucked up. I feel bad for the guy now, even though he's a dick and a weirdo.
Yeah, that's why back in high school, you know, he took his, like, his could have been his next love. He went too fast around Dead Man's Curve and went over the side, and he busted his legs up. It's like, then Joe and Cheshire was like, you've gone over to the dark side of skating. I know, skate, what are you doing? But I loved him. Oh, I hugged him too much and I broke him.
Yeah. Fairly messed up, but like, it's an interesting way to give him, if not sympathy, then to understand where he's coming from. Yeah.
Yeah. And it particularly because with the other events and the reveal of who the snake is, turns out to be Tadashi, his assistant. You're like, oh, yeah, Snake has entered the tournament because he's trying to. He basically says, yeah, he wants Adam to renounce skateboarding because...
just love that. that exact phrasing is... I'm just sorry. This is skateboarding, right? But it is very much in that Fast and Furious, life or death street racing atmosphere that's got going on.
Yeah.
And it's like, Adam, you've gone over to the dark side of skating. I'm going to make you, like, renounce. You're doing the evil kung fu skating. I was like, the future with the good kung fu skating. I taught you everything you know.
Yeah, yeah. He specifically has the line. It's like, you do forget, I taught you how to skate.
Yes. And the episode...
But you're my servant. You cannot back at your master.
Yeah.
And it makes it clear that Snake is better than Adam because he beats his time by 0.2 of a second.
Yeah, even though that's what Cherry was trying to do in his preliminary stuff. It was just like, he only managed to match it.
Yeah, sounds good, was Adam was trying to find his Eve among these skaters. It's like, oh, you're a snake in the grass trying to spoil for everybody.
Yeah. Trying to ruin the Garden of Eden for Adam. Yeah.
and Langer is finding that skateboarding is not as much fun without someone there to support him.
Yeah, he's like, wait a minute, I was going against Joe, and Joe was going the hardest he fucking could, and I wasn't feeling it. Why not? And meanwhile, he's
having a row with my friend. That's why.
And his ex-friend is just like really sad at home, and his sister's being a little dick to him, but also trying to support him, which is a nice combination.
Yes.
You're totally uncool, big bro, but when you're skating, you're like a fractionally more cool. Still kind of lame, but you know, you're fractionally more cool.
And there's a thing of him watching an appropriate TV show where the guy gave up running, but now makes running shoes. And it's like, it feels really good to be able to support people. And it's just like, yeah, dude, you're really good at building skateboards. That's very useful.
Yeah, Ricky, you're going to be like the
man
the
in
Kenny.
The chair.
You're going to be like, no, you're going to be the guy who assembles the Beyblades. I mean, the skateboards.
So he sneaks back to S to support Langer, but he can't bring himself to actually tell Langer that he's there.
Yeah,
so by the end, yes, we're down to our last eight races.
Harry's gone, I can't believe it.
Well, he was one of the last eight.
Damn it,
he's out the first part. Yeah.
yeah, I know.
I lost a dime on Harry. He was my horse.
I would find it hilarious if they just had Harry, just like this character we've not followed at all, turn out to be actually much better than any of the people we've been following.
Yeah, well, you guys have been doing all that drama. I learned the blade. I mean, skating.
You got no gimmicks. I'm not like a skateboarding vampire or that. I'm just here. I'm a purist. Yeah, straight edge.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it. It was a lot of skateboarding in this. The qualifying sections were all interesting enough on their own. You had Adam versus the little kid, Mia, one who doesn't have a stupid nickname.
I guess because he's like actually the only one of them who's going for being a professional skater, so he's just using his name. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I did enjoy the amount of crowds like cheering for the various guys, and then at one stage it's like, "You got this, Harry!" And I was just like, "Ah, good man."
Oh, poor Harry. It was cool seeing some of the more established skaters there actually get to show off their stuff, like in a proper competition. Cherry's really going for it. Yeah, yeah. He's like showing his transforming boards, going like the lawnmower, but going faster on the straightaways. And Joe has this bit more, he basically kind of wall jumps to gain acceleration on the straightaways, which never seen him get that serious before. And it's kind of cool to see these guys who are usually here to dispense, you know, sage advice to Recky or Langer or anything like that. But
they're actually very good at their thing.
Seeing what the nuance of their technique is, you know, beyond seeing them just like bicker in the restaurant. favorite running joke is still, "Hey, Joe, fella, can I charge my skateboard in your restaurant when I'm here?" It's not plugged into the wall. Oh, boy.
Yes, Joe has that move, which only he could do because he's the only one with the strong enough leg muscles to pull it off.
Yeah.
Also, that crouch that he takes looks really cool. Also, I didn't notice before, he has, like, lumpy wheels. And I was like, is that a hindrance or is that something only a man made of pure muscle can fucking handle?
Still looks fun and badass, and this is just them doing on like the first like stage of the course. Now they're going to go back like full length in it of it as well. I kind of wish, you know, maybe it's kind of trying to tantalize us because this kind of stops in the middle of the showdown between Langer and Joe, and Joe is showing what he can really do. Oh, it stops right there. I kind of want to see it in the race, but that's next time.
this show is so good. It goes like tournament arc, and I'm like, fuck yeah, bring me that. That sounds great.
It's done. Like we've gone through a few of the actual like the main quarterfinals or like that already. It's just really rocking it along. It's really good. Still looks fucking great as well. Let's put it together.
Apparently this skate chill out manga tie-in thing is done in the style of the eye catches.
Oh, the little chibi guys. Yeah. Cool. That's a nice style, so that's good.
Next up, we've got Dragon Quest, The Adventure of Dai, episode 21, Mom's Decision, in which Mom decides she's going to reclass because her pervert uncle commented that she had her dad's strength.
He commented that while trying to grab her tits, because
that is true.
The answer was there all along. He was just trying to dodge out, but she's just there with Kung Fu Kick. That's my whole deal. And that's why I kind of feel like I keep messing up in the, because I don't round out the party. Because you've got a hero, you've got a mage, you've got like Leona now who can do full heals. That was kind of my bag before, but she can do it better than me. I gotta be a different class to which we can balance out the party. That's what
the guy does point out, like the hero's a jack of all trades, master of none. Whereas the fighter is just like all power, like more power than the hero, but the hero's got one thing that no one else in the party has. Courage. And Pop's like, oh yeah, I am a coward. I guess that's true.
the hero's like DPS. We need like, you know, I need a good sort of tank in here to, to take some of the fire for us.
And do the hard hits as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's going to go off, find a god of martial arts in a mountain somewhere. And the princess is like, well, Pop, you really ought to say, if you've got feelings for her, you should say something, because this might be the last time
a real shit stirrer.
Ever see her.
She's right, though.
When they're sitting in the thing, one's like, oh, I feel bad because I'm not as good as Leona at healing, and I'm kind of dragging the party down. It's like, yes, you might be a burden on the party if you keep that shit up. And like, and everyone's like, Leona, that's fucked up. But and Mam's like, you know, thanks, Leona. I appreciate you just being frank with me.
That's nice her stuff. Thing, though. She's just blocked everybody when Hyunkul was saying, please punish me, and saying, oh, what punish you? By you living your life as a bastion of justice. That's what you're going to make it up.
Yeah, that would actually make it up.
Don't be sorry, just don't do it again.
In this case, shit stirring is like, hey, Pop, confess, go confess. But like baiting him into it, basically. And then she's kind of like, Madai is like, oh, what do you think he's going to say? Oh my God, this is so good. Cute.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's all up in being the audience for this.
Yes. And
when he does manage to say, it's like, you don't have to walk to the mystical mountain. I could just teleport you there with my thing. And he gets his arm around her. And she's like, nice. He got an arm in.
But he bottles it when he gets there. And goes, oh, this isn't the mountain we're going for. It's the forest where we first met. It's like, yeah. I guess I was just thinking about that. You know, because this is where we first met. And you're going right now. And it's just,
it means a lot to me.
Well, when you go and train to be a martial artist, don't get all shredded like a big gorilla or nothing. Oh, man. Yeah, that'd be really weird. Don't be doing that. It's like,
that totally wouldn't be something I'm into. Bye. See you later.
But anyways, no, hey, it's good. Hey, see you later, all right? It's gone. It's not time. I'm not the man that she thinks I am. I'm not brave. I'm not as brave as I could believe I could be.
She ends up like complimenting him, going like, yeah, no, Pop, I've seen you fucking grow and get stronger, and I want to be strong like you. And he's like, I'm not that guy that she thinks I am, so I gotta go become that guy, while she goes and becomes fucking badass.
We also check in on the villains.
They're taking stock.
Always
here.
A delight.
We've had a good run, lads. One of our generals is dead, and two of them have defected. What's happening?
Well, that's okay. Ooh. We've got a new guy here. We've got Kilvern and his best buddy, Pororo.
I mean, you say that's a good thing, but they're all like, oh, Jesus, it's the Dark fucking King's personal assassin. We must have fucked up. That's like the boss's secretary come to tell you guys did.
They've sent in internal affairs to put an audit on us now and straighten up our shit. Oh, man.
But the main thing he has to do first is, well, I mean, like the two turncoats, they know where the fucking castle is, so we gotta move the castle. Let me just take out the key on the ignition here and get this fucking shit rolled.
Growl, up it goes. It's like fucking Hyunkul and Quackenthrop. What the hell did the castle go to? Does this get up and walk? Actually, that's precisely what it is.
There's footprints there, so yeah. Also, our dragon boy has shown up for the big meeting, and is like, yeah, I know why the fuck you've been keeping him away from me, because he's fucking Dragon Knight, isn't he? Everyone's like, holy shit, no way. And he's like, all right, cool, I'm going to fight him now.
It's very much shit on Hadler Day at the enemy HQ.
That's really funny.
And it just makes you sympathetic for him as well.
Yeah.
It is like, you know, from last week when we was revived by Miss Fern, and we see like the corruption of her was spreading through him. Yep. He was Demon King of all these boys, but this is beyond his control now. He's just a henchman.
He's one of the other henchmen. Yeah,
he's slowly starting to realize that.
Yeah, it's some really good stuff. I was looking up, like, because there's that new Sentai starting next week. And I'd forgotten that, because my favourite is, I can't remember it now. It's the dinosaur, not the most recent dinosaur one, the previous dinosaur one.
Not Ryu Solger.
No, that's the most recent one.
Yeah.
Kyuryuga, I think. And I hadn't really, I knew your writer of this had written that. I hadn't realised he'd written every episode of it, which is a rarity.
Couldn't have stopped.
Yeah, but that's the only Sentai one he's done. He's done a bunch of stuff for the Kamen Riders, but I was hoping there was another Sentai one I could dig into because I was enjoying this so much.
Mm-hmm.
But alas, this will have to make do with its monster soap opera.
I mean, they're pretty good at bickering, so yeah.
It is. It's just that they're just like teenagers, which I guess is the point. like mean
never
teenagers.
Quite grew up, you know. Yeah. They've been in this like evil villain game for too long. You know, all the costumes, the pageantry, evil speeches. Never quite aged out of it. Just kept on going.
Mm-hmm. Stayed an edgelord forever.
Yeah.
And Crocodine comes along and he's like, oh, this is why we could go. He's a bit more mature and responsible about the whole thing. He says, oh, you gotta settle down, get a real job, and be a real hero.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the fact that Kilvern and Pirro are just shit stirrers as well. Like, instantly see these guys and just like, oh, yeah. You get why the other ones will hate them. Except maybe Mistvern, because clearly there's something up with him beyond his initial appearance.
Well, the boat called Vern, which is the name of Dark King, they are just like facets of his personality. They're just like things there. He's not one but two dudes, two eyeballs there, like, keeping an eye on things. You know, that's all it is.
Next week, they go to a department store.
Going shopping.
I'm fine with that.
I like that little loop bit it does as well, or you know how at the kind of catharsis when you're playing an RPG, where beating a really hard boss fight, you've got tons of experience and all the loot, and then you go to the next town, you want to see, oh, what new gear can I get from my party?
Oh, they got
now
the +2 gear? Fucking A, I've been carrying this +1 piece of shit for ages.
All yeah, right, yeah. Mithril Sword, get the fuck out of here. I'm going for the Adamant Blade now, yeah.
And they do appear to have a fashion show bit, and I'm just like, yeah, give me all them tropes. That's good.
New costumes.
Yeah.
Then we've got Pretty Cure, I believe, from Niall to explain.
Yeah, Tropical Rouge Pretty Cure. It is a new one. Like, summer is on the way. It's bigger and bouncier and brighter. We were taught away from, you know, pathogens and germs and viruses and so forth. Let's have something that's a bit brighter and bouncier. And it comes out swinging. I think it's a really fun, bouncy, and very cartoony time. It's just evident in there. Our main character, Manatsu Natsumi, she is the best kind of protagonist, an impetuous dumbass. not to be shitting too much on, like, Nordica from Healing Good Breaker. Perfectly nice, all those girls very pleasant and so forth. But it could be a bit of a drip sometimes. Whereas the impression I get from Manatsu and some of the other characters from the opening credits is like, these are all like their own kind of dumbasses in their own ways. One of them, I think she's like Cure Flamingo. She's like both the older, more sensible, quote unquote, member of the team. They're all doing their bit, but she's just there. You've got two dumbos going like, yeah. I'm looking forward to when she gets introduced. But not about them. It's like, it's Manatsu. She's moving from, I think, I guess a remote island. We're somewhere in Okinawa or the tropical region of Japan anyway. She's packing her bags. She's going to be moving on to the mainland and moving on to the bigger island to be with her mom who works at the aquarium, packing all her shit up. Into a suitcase that's way too big, and she's just like going, yeah, but she's going to get through with guts and gumption because she's going to be starting a new life. What's learned from her dad is do what's important to you right now, which is a classy way of saying YOLO, really, if you ask me. And she gets onto the mainland. Also, she has like a keepsake of her mother's there, which is just a tube of lipstick. And when she's feeling like the world's getting to her, when you're feeling very vulnerable, you know, you got to pull on your armor. Just put a bit of dab of on there, and you're ready to face the world. Face forward. Under the sea, we all want to live. with a mermaid, and she's conversing with the mermaid queen, saying, yes, there was trouble a brewing under the sea. We got like got this little box, this locked box we haven't been able to open, up to the surface world and find a human who can open it. It's like, humans, says Laura, what do we need them for? But it improves my odds of being queen. I'll do whatever you say. So off I go on my mission. Now she has dropped her lipstick into the water while messing around with us on the ferry over, and thinks lots of her, but Laura was caught that, like, what the hell is this shit? Oh, whatever. And they run into each other then, while Manitou was enjoying the sights and sounds of this new town she's going to live in, meeting her man, going to the aquarium, all good stuff. Laura's trying to find a human. It's like, which one of these humans has like a heart filled with sunshine that could be the precure who would be able to open the box and help me out? and then it kind of just reveals herself. It's just like, just kind of lounging out, right out there in the open, in the middle of a cove, anybody can see her, and hides herself very, very badly. And it's like a rock. I think it could be a particular formation, maybe somewhere in the world where it's been eroded, but there's like a heart-shaped hole in it. I think I've seen something like that somewhere in the world, and I'm not sure where, though. Mm. It's like, oh my God, there's a fish stuck in this hole. I pull it out. It's like, oh, what are you doing? A mermaid. It's like, yeah, you are totally a mermaid. What's going on with there? It's like, oh, I guess I gotta tell you. I'm just trying to find a human who can open this box. Is that you? You seem like it could be a person like that. Oh, could be me. Hey, you got my lipstick. Yo, is that what this is? Oh, yeah, here you go with that. Anyways, you seem pretty cool, but you can't open the box, so I guess I'm just going to chill out. Go on and see if you're up. I'm out of here. It's like, huh, okay. But Laura immediately runs into trouble then, because there are some monster boys walking around. They've accosted, I think, a team of kind of like rugby players. They could be soccer players as well. But they're on the beach doing a bit of training. And a crab man appears from the ocean and says, oh, I'm going to steal their power of motivation. I'm going to like absorb their energy. And turn it into a monster. Which he targets like a pineapple. It's a palm tree, but I guess the pineapples grow on palm trees.
They grow on like the top of a pineapple tree, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I guess a pineapple tree then. The big pineapple monster absorbs all of energy. It has this really kind of cool, like creepy face. So it's like, oh, I'm a lazy kind of pineapple. But then it has these kind of scary doll eyes and this grin comes up on his face when it's like sucking up all their energy. It's kind of a sinister, actually.
Mm.
Oh, no, help! I'm being attacked by the monster, says Laura. And Matt says, trouble a brewing down the old beach. You better get down there. And it's like, you know, why are you doing that, Laura? Remember, put her down. It's like, whatever, man. Like, I like how the crab man monster's like, no, I'm over it, man. I'm not feeling it today. He's here to steal motivation, presumably because he has none. It's like, whatever, I'm just done today. I'm not feeling it. Not today. I'm out of here.
Mm.
No, God, what's important to me right now, what's important to me is saving that mermaid's life. It's like, oh, she could be the one, because the keys appeared right in her hand. It was actually a little ring. It's like, take the box, open it up, you're totally a pretty cure. It's like, yeah, put it on, lipstick, pow, eyeshadow, pow, hair, it's magic, don't think about it much, pow, costume, pow, it's all good. Cure summer, I'm gonna kick some ass and get like a very fun and bouncy action scene when she puts up a pineapple monster and finishes it off. And then Crabman's like, whatever, man. I'm not feeling it today. It's only I'm just going to go home. I'm out of here. And to save the rugby team, wherever they were. It's like, hey, it turns out you're pretty cure after all. Like, guess I was. How was about that? Yes. Maybe I can use you to help advance my ploy to be the queen. I mean, to save the ocean from the Witch of the Lays, which I'm trying to, I might look up what it actually, because it seems like an odd translation. But because you're getting cut to the evil bad guys based under the ocean, it's like, madame, Witch of the Lays, you've been fallen in because the pretty cure has appeared. What should we do? And it's just like, I'll deal with it tomorrow.
I'm going to bed. The general thing of the monsters is like malaise and depression is what you're trying to fight.
I guess they're trying to, you know, we've been effective of world events. You've been indoors, sure. Haven't been able to see your friends and do some much, haven't been out in the sunshine maybe as much as you would like. You might be feeling a bit, ooh, downbeat, a bit unmotivated. Monsters feel that way too. They're just trying to steal your motivation and take it onto themselves. I do kind of like how it looks too. It seems to be kind of a big whale or whale shark looking like sea witch type of job, but she has the this like visor like Cyclops, or more like I keep forgetting the dude. The lawyer from Phoenix Wright, Godo.
Multiple
the narrow red lines like that. Like
was
just like, no, I'm going back to bed. I'll do it tomorrow. Come on. We're gonna take over the ocean.
But if those villains get motivated, we're in a lot of trouble. Yeah.
But it's really, really fun. I think this is like it's grabbed me from the off a lot more than Healing Good Pretty Good did, because I get this tangible feeling of like what the characters are. Like Manatsu, of course, from the off, that's for me it's doing so much. Even from the opening, I can see like I can get what the rest of the people, I get what the whole deal is. Again, like Kira Flamingo, if that's who she is, like just working the weights up and doing that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like these are all gonna be fun dumbasses. The opening is really good at seeing them just They're doing the hula dances. They're kind of also talking about some mischief, like robbing stuff and shopping and having sweets. It's like, there's this energy that's really palpable to it. The first one in mind, but also looks really nice as well. Again, this is like a very elastic, bouncy energy going through it. It feels very sunny. It feels very bright. It feels very energetic, which is, you know, when it's a cartoon about trying to banish those feelings of malaise and depression you've been feeling for the last while. It's fucking wiped it right off of me. Couldn't stop watching them.
That's good.
Well, the writer, I think, is probably known for doing the writing for Free, the swimming anime,
right.
Which I guess will play to the strengths. There's going to be a lot of swimming involved in this, I'm sure. But yeah, I'm just really like enamored by the whole thing. I like how their supernatural mascot character is this mermaid Laura, and she's this very self-centered. It's like, oh, I want to help save the oceans and that, but only if it helps me, you know, climb the ladder towards being the possible queen of mermaids one day. Like, yeah, you got that little kind of nasty edge to you, a little kind of very self-interested little streak. I hope that kind of keeps up all the way through, because Magical girls are nice. We want to have like a little bit of, you know, a little bit of a
wheeler dealer in there. Yeah.
A little bit of an asshole, you know. They don't want to be kind of perfect, perfectly formed, perfectly honest, nice human beings all the time. They fuck up sometimes. And it's funny when they do that. So yeah, just, I can't wait to see more of this. It's fucking grabbing me the most out of from when I started keeping current with the pre-Girl series. Starting from Star Twinkle, this is the one that's really, I think, jammed me the most. This is first impressions, open to flipping on this if it fucks it up somewhere down the line very soon, but I don't know whether that happened. But I'm really on board with this. I would say, even for either of you, have a look yourselves. You may not want to follow it all the way through, but I think you would have like a nice time just watching even that first one. It's just, again, really bouncy and fun. It'll really fun pull you forward and get you up all the way for a rush or funk you feel in that moment. Give it a lash. And that goes for everybody listening at home and watching at home as well. Please.
But if you don't want to feel upbeat and happy.
That's what I watched instead.
Why don't you watch Kimono Jihen, episode 8, Truth. In which, yes, turns out all the other children have been kept and are loyal to their uncle. Or stepuncle, I guess. He's a stepuncle. And if they want to get to him, they've got to go through them first.
And the best part about these things is they're all horribly malformed, half spider, half some other kind of monster, because they have multiple red eyes. But the best part is, and the uncle is saying, it's like, it's really cool. They're actually like very loyal to me. They're smart enough to learn language, although I don't think they know what they're saying. And sure, they just copied what their mom was saying. So all of these monsters just constantly scream at our
Shiki.
At our spider boy, yeah. Shiki. It's like, Shiki, Shiki, I love you, Shiki. Shiki, you're my son, I love you. And that's all they can scream. And I was just like, in his mother's voice, obviously. And I was like, this fucking sucks. This is horrifying. I hate this. It's really nasty. But that's what they're going for, obviously.
Yeah, and Kobane's like, Shiki, I asked you before. I'm asking you again. Do you want me to do something about this? This is after Nobimaru had offered that him and Kobane do it, regardless of asking Shiki, but he tells Nobimaru to shut his face. And then he's going to speak to Shiki. And Shiki gives him the go-ahead to murder all his siblings.
Yeah, help me out here. In the meantime, Inagami has been bitten by one of them, so yes. He can't transform because his arm is all filled with poison. And they get himself and Akira get separated. Yeah. But fortunately, some mysterious girl shows up to save them and kind of talks the other monster children, for lack of a better term, out of it. And so what was it, like, wash your arm in this river and take a drink of it too. It'll heal you up right good.
Yes.
Which does work out for him. But in the meantime, Cabana has a lot of siblings to murder.
Yes. There's a funny moment with Akira, like, threatening the monsters while hiding behind Inagaki, and he's like...
Like, I'm not going to be a coward anymore, I'm going to be strong, and he's like, you can't say that while hiding behind me.
Yes, I mean, that's how this works. Much more impressive if you step forward when you say that sort of thing. Because his arm's poisoned, he can't summon his gun.
He can't seem to do any transformations,
Kabane just murders every single one of the monsters.
Just punches them through their heads, yes, that kind of thing.
Tears bits like, of them off.
The uncle's like, I guess I shouldn't hold back anymore. And he summons like a giant one, and the commander just like runs up it and starts beating the shit out of its eyes, exploding them. Just gore and everything everywhere.
Awesome.
And then throws the uncle to Shiki, but then the other three show up, and they're like, she wants them to prevent Shiki from killing the uncle because she needs to know where the mother is.
Well, she keeps saying where the cocoon is. She is. She's not saying the mother. Yes. But it's just like, yeah, we know. We've got it mostly figured out, kind of, from context.
But that he realizes that's the thing he's got over. So if he doesn't give it up, then...
You can't kill me if I don't fucking tell you.
But luckily, we've got a hacker vampire on our side. And we'll drag him.
He rings up Mihai, and he's like, hey, Mihai, I need you to do some research. He's like, dude, I'm doing a raid.
He says, I'm doing like an important mission with my friends. He says, you're playing a video game. how could you tell? Like, we could
just
all...
clicking on a PlayStation pad in his hand kind of thing. And it's just like, could you look this shit up on this guy for me? He's like, I looked that up fucking ages ago. I know it all off the top of my head.
Yes.
He rings his bank, his like a few other places, and like his cousins in the mountains, like the most. So you want to check one of those places, probably.
He's in the mountains. He goes to these four places. One of them's a pond surrounded by this particular type of plant, and Shiki's like, "That's my mother's favorite plant." And sure enough, the cocoon was actually in the pond all along, and that's why it was a healing pond, because
the mother was wrapped in the healing cocoon.
Yes.
The daughter says that I am the golden silk. Is that the way she just...
Yeah, the golden thread, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So she was the successful experiment.
Yes.
And her mother has been wrapped in the silk, which she's in a coma, seemingly, but she is healed. She actually doesn't seem to have aged a day.
Yeah.
So
they're going to get her out, take her somewhere safe, and Shiki decides he's not going to kill the uncle because... He can't do anything now. He's completely powerless. Inari's watching him, so if he tries to do anything, he's going to be in trouble. And they all go away, and then Nobimaru is like, well, that was all very nice, but you've crossed a kitsune.
I did like the way it's like he kind of just, like, he was in the episode initially. He's like, oh, Cabane, save me from these monsters. And Cabane's like beating the shit out of the monsters. He's like, you can fucking handle yourself. And he's like, you got me. And then he sets fire to all the monsters that are attacking him. But like he kind of like sort of slinks into the background, and it's like, yeah, where's that guy gone? And he's like, hey, so they left you alive, but that doesn't really work out for me. Turns into a horrifying fox, and doesn't do anything nice, presumably, from cutting back to the woods and just seeing a huge explosion.
Yes. And the place they're taking the mother to is
the Yokai Hospital.
a little old lady. I believe the reveal is quite neat next week when we learn exactly what this hospital is.
Because it's like it's basically like an A&E, and they have like only come at opening hours kind of sign up and the thing. And it's like, hey, we're here with a thing. We need you to help this person. It's like, who is it? It's a monster person. Oh fuck! It's you, Inagami. No bother. Bring her in. So we're going to be hanging out in the Yokai Hospital next week.
Yeah, I suspect it's probably clearer if you live in Japan as to what this building is.
Yeah, yeah. I'm only going by like an A&E because just the nature of the waiting room and the counter and everything, it reminded me of that. But yeah, it probably is.
I wonder if there's particular signs which would give away what it actually is. I don't know whether we're going to get to the reveal of what David Matarazzo's deal is in this series, but now I know what it is. I'm leaning towards him being the final villain, but not necessarily that he's plotting villainous stuff now. But there's just something about him that I don't know what his plan is, but there's definitely something about him which thematically I think would make him the ideal villain. But we'll see whether that gets revealed by the end. Is it
a kindness to bring in a bunch of kids who are, you know, strays and they don't have anything else, and you're going to help them find their parents and do the thing that they want to do, and also like put them through the most fucked up shit possible?
I don't know Inugaki's name. I've been talking about Nobu Mari, the little Kitsune.
Oh, sorry. Yes. I see. Yeah.
No, I think Inugaki's like the pragmatist type. He feels like he can maintain a relationship, a balance with the Kitsune. Like, we work together, but we won't get in each other's way.
Yeah.
Is that sort of practicality. Whereas Nobu Mari is up to something. And I know what his secret is, but I'll say I don't know where that's going to get to. In this particular season. But as that still doesn't necessarily reveal what he wants. But yeah, it suddenly dawned on me thematically that what his secret is would definitely make him the ideal suspect.
The long-term villain.
The long-term villain.
Okay. I'm still enjoying this show. Last week was already fucked up, so I guess I was slightly steeled more so this week. But yeah. I was still like, that's horrible. Why would you just make the monsters only able to say that? That's the worst.
The fucked up reveals last week. It's more like it's a bunch of creepy monsters and a load of unpleasant violence.
But I'm seeing a child crying while having a panic attack, while another child starts murdering his technically monster siblings while they scream in his mother's voice. And I'm just like, I hate all of this. This is a horror fucking show. And it's intending to be that, so yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and the other key point is Shiki like promises to make this up to Kabane. He'll do something in return to him in future. For him helping him out here.
I owe you a big one.
Because it should have been me to do this, but thank you for doing it. So,
because Cabana's like, when he's carrying his mother off, like, we'll put her in the car, we'll bring her to the hospital. And Cabana's like, I'll give you a hand with that, Cheeky. I can see you're shaking and shit. And Akira's like, no, dude, let him fucking do this bit, okay? give him this, all right?
Yeah.
Closure, please.
I think we get like a probably like one episode with a couple of, I don't know, next time family. So it might end it. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know whether it's two stories or not, but
I feel like they're going to do a two story thing, and part of it's obviously going to be more resolving the fact that Cheeky does have family now, and maybe dipping into someone else's family, which would more likely be Akira, right?
Yeah, I think it's Akira next after this break.
Which
I guess will draw us probably to the end of the season if it's like 12 episodes long or so. It's a very strong series. Again, it's another one. Having said that, I don't think anything we're watching at the moment has weakened in terms of its look.
Yeah, really, really fucking good stuff lately. I'm not even too down on something that does tend to drop the ball a little, but like, hasn't at all anyone ever? Everyone's playing a perfect game.
They're all doing very well. I mean, we got stuff like Jujutsu Kaisen, that's been important now. It's just like one. He keeps on going. That's four or five in a row now where it hasn't really lit up with these.
The worst I can say with Jujutsu Kaisen is the pacing was a little weird in the way it would end like halfway through a story. But it's really picked up from that. But even then, consistently, the animation has been great. It's been drawing me back in with that.
Back Arrow is the one with probably the worst animation, but it's been consistently okay. Yeah. But its CG is really good.
Yes.
Anytime the CG robot fights, I'm just like, this is fucking cool.
He did a ranged attack after we say he doesn't have a ranged attack. He pulled one out this week.
He did. He fucking started shooting lasers this week. I fucking feel like an Asian now. Yeah. I was like, oh, is his thing? He does. Never mind. Fuck off.
Yeah, what's good about those robots and the way that they're animated as they move is that the robots are inherently formed from one's own personality and conviction. And they're able to, like, you know, in their movements, in the way they fight and act and fly around sometimes, you get that sense of who is inside there, what their personality, what their kind of feel is, and they're doing that, and it's a good enough model, and it's executed in such a way that you can feel that down to that little detail in the model, in the design.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. The physical movements is acting the characters through CGI avatar rather than their animated avatar. Yeah. It's very well done.
Right, yeah, that's your lot. Before the stream crapped out again. And it's getting late. And I'd like to say there's less next week, but episode 1000 of Detective Countdown ends. Out with the Rohan, in with the Conan, for me at least.
Okay, fair enough.
Even though it's a retelling of episode 11, I think. Something like that. It's like a very early story. But enough waffling. We'll be back next week. Wednesday, Niall, is that correct?
Wednesday the 10th of March. Put it in your diaries, folks.
Righty-ho. At some point, I shall probably join these two streams up into a single video file. Otherwise, you can listen to the podcast at dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Oi. Ta-ta.